Listening Library presents Sun by Lois Lowry. Read for you by Bernadette Dunn. Dedication. In memory of Martin. Book 1. Before. Chapter 1. The young girl cringed when they buckled the eyeless leather mask around the upper half of her face and blinded her. It felt grotesque and unnecessary. But she didn't object. It was the procedure. She knew that. One of the other vessels had described it to her at lunch a month before. Mask? She had asked in surprise, almost chuckling at the strange image. What's the mask for?
Well, it's not really a mask.
The young woman seated on her left corrected herself and took another bite of the crisp salad.
It's a blindfold, actually.
She was whispering. They were not supposed to discuss this among themselves. Blindfold? She had asked in astonishment, then laughed apologetically. I don't seem to be able to converse, do I? I keep repeating what you say. But blindfold? Why?
They don't want you to see the product when it comes out of you, when you birth it.
The girl pointed to her bulging belly.
You've produced already, right? She asked her.
The girl nodded. Twice.
What's it like?
Even asking it, she knew it was a somewhat foolish question. They had had classes, seen diagrams, been given instructions. Still, none of that was the same as hearing it from someone who had already gone through the process. And now that they were already disobeying the restriction about discussing it, well, why not ask?
Easier the second time. Didn't hurt as much.
When she didn't respond, the girl looked at her quizzically.
Hasn't anyone told you it hurts?
They said discomfort.
The other girl gave a sarcastic snort. Discomfort, then, if that's what they want to call it. Not as much discomfort the second time, and it doesn't take as long.
Vessels! Vessels!
The voice of the matron through the speaker was stern.
Monitor your conversations, please. You know the rules.
The girl and her companion obediently fell silent then, realizing that they had been heard through the microphones embedded in the walls of the dining room. Some of the other girls giggled. They were probably also guilty. There was so little else to talk about. The process, their job, their mission, was the thing they had in common. But the conversation shifted after the stern warning. She had taken another spoonful of soup. Food in the birth mother's dormitory was always plentiful and delicious. The vessels were being meticulously nourished. Of course, growing up in the community, she had always been adequately fed. Food had been delivered to her family's dwelling each day. But when she had been selected birth mother at 12, the course of her life had changed. It had been gradual. The academic courses, math, science, law, at school became less demanding for her group. Fewer tests, less reading required. The teachers paid little attention to her. Courses in nutrition and health had been added to her curriculum, and more time was spent on exercise in the outdoor air. Special vitamins had been added to her diet. Her body had been examined, tested, and prepared for her time here. After that year had passed and part of another, she was deemed ready. She was instructed to leave her family dwelling and move to the birth mother's dormitory. Relocating from one place to another within the community was not difficult. She owned nothing. Her clothing was distributed and laundered by the central clothing supply. Her school books were requisitioned by the school and would be used for another student the following year. The bicycle she had ridden to school throughout her earlier years was taken to be refurbished and given to a different, younger child. There was a celebratory dinner her last evening in the dwelling. Her brother, older by 6 years, had already gone on to his own training in the Department of Law and Justice. They saw him only at public meetings. He had become a stranger. So the last dinner was just the three of them, she and the parental unit who had raised her. They reminisced a bit. They recalled some funny incidents from her early childhood. The time she had thrown her shoes into the bushes and come home from the child care center barefoot. There was laughter, and she thanked them for the years of her upbringing.
Were you embarrassed when I was selected for birth mother? She asked them.
She had herself secretly hoped for something more prestigious. At her brother's selection, when she had been just 6, they had all been very proud. Law and justice was reserved for those of especially keen intelligence. But she had not been a top student.
"No," her father said. "We trust the committee's judgment. They knew what you would do best."
"And birth mother is very important," Mother added. "Without birth mothers, none of us would be here." Then they wished her well in the future. Their lives were changing, too. Parents no longer, they would move now into the place where childless adults lived. The next day, she walked alone to the dormitory attached to the birthing unit and moved into the small bedroom she was assigned. From its window, she could see the school she had attended and the recreation field beyond. In the distance, there was a glimpse of the river that bordered the community. Finally, several weeks later, after she was settled in and beginning to make friends among the other girls, she was called in for insemination. Not knowing what to expect, she had been nervous. But when the procedure was complete, she felt relieved. It had been quick and painless. "Is that all?" she had asked in surprise, rising from the table when the technician gestured that she should.
"That's all. Come back next week to be tested and certified."
She had laughed nervously. She wished they had explained everything more clearly in the instruction folder they had given her when she was selected.
"What does certified mean?" she asked.
The worker, putting away the insemination equipment, seemed a little rushed. There were probably others waiting.
"Once they're sure it's implanted," he explained impatiently, "then you're a certified vessel. Anything else?" he asked her as he turned to leave. "No? You're free to go then."
That all seemed such a short time ago. Now here she was, 9 months later, with the blindfold strapped around her eyes. The discomfort had started some hours before intermittently. Now it was non-stop. She breathed deeply as they had instructed. It was difficult, blinded like this. Her skin was hot inside the mask. She tried to relax, to breathe in and out, to ignore the No, she thought. It is pain. It really is pain. Gathering her strength for the job, she groaned slightly, arched her back, and gave herself up to the darkness. Her name was Claire. She was 14 years old. Chapter 2. They clustered around her. She could hear them when her mind was able to focus through the surging intermittent pain. They were talking urgently to each other. Something was wrong. Again and again they checked her with their instruments, metallic and cold. A cuff on her arm was inflated, and someone pressed a metal disc there at her elbow, then a different device against her stretched and shaking belly. She gasped as another convulsive pain ripped through her. Her hands were tied on either side of the bed. She was unable to move. Was it supposed to be like this? She tried to ask, but her voice was too weak, mumbly and scared, and no one heard. "Help me," she whimpered. But their attention, she sensed, was not on her, not really. They were worried about the product. Their hands and tools were on her taut middle. It had been hours now since all this began, the first twinge, then the rhythmic hardening pain, and later, the buckling on of the mask. "Put her out. We'll have to go in for it." It was a commanding voice, clearly someone in charge. "Quickly!" There was a startling urgency to it. "Breathe deeply," they ordered her, shoving something rubbery up under the mask, holding it to her mouth and nose. She did. She had no choice. She would have suffocated otherwise. She inhaled something with an unpleasantly sweet scent, and immediately, the pain subsided. Her thoughts subsided. Her being drifted away. Her last sensation was the awareness, pain-free, of something cutting into her belly, carving her.
She emerged to a new, different pain. No longer the throbbing agony, but now a broad, deep ache. She felt freed and realized that her wrists were unshackled. She was still on the bed, covered with a warm blanket. Metal rails had been lifted with a clanking sound, so she was protected on either side. The room was empty now.
No attendants or technicians, no equipment. Only Claire, alone. She turned tentatively, assessing the emptiness of the room with her eyes, and then tried to lift her head but was forced back by the pain the attempt caused. She couldn't look down at her body but carefully moved her hands to rest there on what had been her own taut, swollen belly. It was flat now, bandaged, and very sore. The product was what they had carved out of her. And she missed it. She was suffused with a desperate feeling of loss.
You've been decertified. 3 weeks had passed. She had recuperated in the birthing unit for the first week, tended and checked, pampered a bit, actually, she realized. But there was an awkwardness to everything. There with her were other young women recovering, so there was pleasant conversation, a few jokes about being slender again. Their bodies, hers as well, were massaged each morning, and their gentle exercise was supervised by the staff. Her recuperation was slower, though, than the others, for she had been left with a wound, and they had not. After the first week, they were moved to an interim place, where they amused themselves with talk and games, before returning 2 weeks later to the large, familiar group of vessels.
Back they went to the dormitory, greeting old friends, many of them larger in size now, their bellies growing as they waited, and taking their places again in the group. They all looked alike, in their shapeless smock-like dresses, with their identical haircuts, but personalities distinguished them.
Nadia was funny, making a joke of everything. Miriam, very solemn and shy. Suzanne was organized and efficient. As vessels returned following production, there was surprisingly little talk of the task. How did it go? Someone would ask, and the reply would be a nonchalant shrug and, all right, fairly easy, or a wry, not too bad, with a face indicating that it had not been pleasant.
Good to have you back.
Thanks, how were things while I was gone?
The same. Two new vessels just arrived, and Nancy's gone.
What did she get?
Farm.
Good, she wanted that.
It was casual talk, inconsequential. Nancy had delivered her third product not long before. After the third, the vessels were reassigned. Farm, clothing factory, food delivery.
Claire remembered that Nancy had hoped for farm. She liked the outdoors, and a particular friend of hers had been assigned farm some months before. She hoped to spend the next part of her working life in the company of someone she enjoyed. Claire felt happy for her. But she was apprehensive about her own future. Although her memory was hazy, she knew that something had gone wrong at her own production. It was clear that no one else had ended up with a wound. She had tried, somewhat shyly, to ask the others, those who had produced more than once, but they seemed shocked and confused by her questions.
"Is your belly still sore?" Claire whispered to Miriam, who had been in the recuperation place with her.
"Sore? No," Miriam had replied. They were sitting beside each other at breakfast.
"Mine is, just where the scar is, when I press on it," Claire explained, touching her hand gently to the place.
"Scar?" Miriam made a face. "I don't have a scar." She turned away and joined another conversation.
Claire tried again, carefully asking a few other vessels, but no one had a scar. No one had a wound. After a while, her own ache subsided, and she tried to ignore the uneasy awareness that something had gone very wrong. Then she was called in.
"Claire," the voice from the speaker announced at midday while the vessels were eating, "please report to the office immediately after lunch."
Flustered, Claire looked around. Across the table was Alyssa, a special friend. They had been selected the same year, both 12s at the same time, and so she had known Alyssa through her school years. But Alyssa was newer here. She had not been inseminated as soon as Claire. Now she was in the early stages of her first production.
"What's that about?" Alyssa asked her when they heard the directive.
"I don't know."
"Did you do something wrong?"
Claire frowned.
"I don't think so. Maybe I forgot to fold my laundry."
"They wouldn't call you in for that, would they?"
"I don't think so. It's so minor."
"Well,"
Alyssa said, beginning to stack her empty dishes, "you'll find out soon enough. It's probably nothing. See you later." She left Claire still sitting at the table.
But it was not nothing. Claire stood facing them in dismay,
as the committee told her of their decision. She had been decertified.
"Gather your things," they told her. "You'll be moved this afternoon."
"Why?" she asked. "Was it because..." "Well, I could tell that something went wrong, but I..."
They were kind, solicitous. "It wasn't your fault."
"What wasn't my fault?" she asked, aware that she shouldn't press them but unable to stop herself. "If you could just explain..."
The committee head shrugged.
"These things happen. A physical problem. It should have been detected sooner. You should not have been inseminated. Who was your first examiner?" he asked.
"I don't remember her name."
"Well, we'll find out. Let's hope it was her first error so that she will have another chance."
They dismissed her then, but she turned at the door because she could not leave without asking. "My product?"
He looked at her dismissively, then relented. He turned to another committee member near him at the table and nodded to the papers in front of her, directing her to look up the information.
"What number was it?" the woman asked him,
but he ignored the question.
"Well," she said, "I'll check by name. You're Claire?" As if they didn't know, they had summoned her here by name, but she nodded.
She moved her finger down a page.
"Yes, here you are. Claire, product number 36. Oh, yes, I see the notations about the difficulties."
She looked up. Claire touched her own belly, remembering. The woman returned the paper to the pile and tapped the edges of the stack to make it tidy.
"He's fine," she said. The committee head glared at her.
"It," she corrected herself. "I meant that it's fine. The medical difficulties didn't affect it." "You'll be fine too, Claire," she added affably.
"Where am I going?" Claire asked.
Suddenly she was frightened. They hadn't yet said she was being reassigned, just decertified. So she would no longer be a birth mother. That made sense. Her body had not performed that function well. But what if decertified people were simply released? The way failures often were.
But their reply was reassuring.
"Fish hatchery," the committee head told her. "You're being moved there. They need help. They're short of workers. Your training will start in the morning. You'll have to catch up. Luckily, you have a quick mind."
He dismissed her now with a wave of his hand, and Claire went back to the dormitory to gather her few things. It was rest time. The other vessels were all napping, the doors to their cubicle-like rooms closed. "He," she thought, as she packed the few personal items that she had. "It was a he. I produced a baby boy. I had a son." The feeling of loss overwhelmed her again.
Chapter 3.
"You'll be issued a bicycle."
The man, his name tag said Dimitri, hatchery supervisor, gestured toward the area where bicycles were standing in racks. He had met her at the door, unsurprised by her arrival. Obviously, he had been notified that she was on her way. Claire nodded. Confined to the birthing unit and its surrounding grounds for over a year now, she had not needed any kind of transportation. And she had walked here, carrying her small case of belongings, from the birth mother's area to the northeast. It wasn't far, and she knew the route. But after so many months, everything seemed new and unfamiliar. She had passed the school and saw children at their required exercise in the recreation field. None seemed to recognize her, though they looked curiously at the young woman walking along the path at midday. It was unusual. Most people were at their jobs. Those who needed to be out and about were on bicycles making their way from one building to another. No one walked. A small girl with hair ribbons grinned at Claire from the exercise routine and waved surreptitiously. Claire smiled back, remembering her own beribboned days, but an instructor called sharply to the child, who made a face and turned back to the assigned calisthenics. Across the central plaza, she caught a glimpse in the dwelling area of the small house where she had grown up. Other people would live there now, couples newly assigned to each other, perhaps waiting for her. She averted her eyes from the nurturing center. It was, she knew, where the products were taken after the birthing, usually in groups, early morning most often. Once, sleepless at dawn, she had watched from the window of her cubicle,
and seen four products tucked into baskets, loaded into a two-wheeled cart attached to the back of a bicycle. After checking their security in the cart, the birthing attendant had ridden off toward the nurturing center to deliver them there.
She wondered if her own product, her boy, number 36, had been taken to the nurturing center yet.
Claire knew that they waited, sometimes days, occasionally weeks, making certain that everything was going well, that the products were healthy, to make the transfer. Well, she sighed. Time to put it out of her mind.
She walked on, past the Hall of Law and Justice. Peter, whom she had once known as a teasing older brother, would be inside at work. If he glanced through a window and saw a young woman walking slowly past, would he know it was Claire? Would he care? Past the House of Elders, the place where the governing committee lived and studied, past small office buildings, past the bicycle repair shop, and now she could see the river that bordered the community, its dark water moving swiftly, foaming around rocks here and there. Claire had always feared the river. As children, they had been warned of its dangers. She had known of a young boy who had drowned. There were rumors, likely untrue, of citizens who had swum across or even made their way across the high forbidden bridge and disappeared into the unknown lands beyond. But she was fascinated by it, too, its constant murmur and movement, and the mystery of it. She crossed the bike path, waiting politely until two young women had pedaled by.
To her left, she could see the shallow fish-holding ponds, and remembered how as younger children she and her friends had watched the silvery creatures darting about. Now she would be working here, at the hatchery, and living here too, she assumed, at least until... Until when? Citizens were given dwellings when they were assigned spouses.
Birth mothers never had spouses, so she had not thought about it until now. Now she wondered, was she eligible now for a spouse, and eventually for... Claire sighed. It was troubling and confusing to think about such things. She turned away from the holding ponds, made her way to the front door of the main building, and was met there by Dimitri. That night, alone in the small bedroom she'd been assigned, Claire looked down from her window to the darkened, surging river below. She yawned. It had been a long and exhausting day. This morning she had awakened in her familiar surroundings, the place where she had lived for so many months, but by midday, her entire life had shifted. She had not had a chance to say goodbye to her friends, the other vessels. They would be wondering where she had gone, but would likely forget her soon. She had taken her place here, been issued a name tag, and been introduced to the other workers. They seemed pleasant enough. Some, older than Claire, had spouses and dwellings, and left at the end of the day's work. Others, like herself, lived here, in the rooms along the corridor. One, Heather, had been the same year as Claire. She had been a 12 at the same ceremony. Surely she would remember Claire's assignment as birth mother. Her eyes flickered in recognition when they were introduced. But Heather said nothing. Neither did Claire. There was nothing really to say. She supposed that she and the younger workers, including Heather, would become friends of a sort. They would sit together at meals and go in groups to attend community entertainments. After a while, they would have shared jokes, probably things about fish, phrases that would make them chuckle.
It had been that way with the other vessels, and Claire found herself missing already the easy camaraderie among them. But she would fit in here. Everyone welcomed her cheerfully and said they'd be glad of her help. The work wouldn't be hard. She had been allowed to watch the lab attendants in gowns and gloves strip eggs from what they called the breeder fish, anesthetized females. A little like squeezing toothpaste, she thought, amused at the image. Nearby, other attendants squeezed what they told her was milt from the male. Then they added the creamy substance to the container that held the fresh eggs. It had to be very precisely timed, they explained, and antiseptic. They worried about contamination and bacteria. The temperature made a difference as well. Everything was carefully controlled. In a nearby room lit by dim red lights, she had watched another gloved worker look through trays of stacked fertilized eggs,
See those spots? The worker had asked Claire.
She pointed to the tray of glistening pink eggs. Claire peered down and saw that most of them had two dark spots. She nodded.
Eyes, the girl told her.
Oh, Claire said, amazed that already, so young and tiny that she could hardly think of it as a fish, it had eyes.
See here? Using a metal tool, the girl pointed to a discolored eyeless egg. This one's dead. Carefully, she plucked it from the tray with her forceps and discarded it in the sink. Then she returned the tray to its rack and reached for the next one.
Why did it die? Claire asked. She found that she was whispering. The room was so dimly lit, so quiet and cool, that her voice was hushed. But the worker replied in a normal tone, very matter-of-fact.
I don't know. The insemination went wrong, I guess. She shrugged and removed another dead egg from the second tray. We have to take them out so they don't contaminate the good ones. I check them every day.
Claire felt a vague discomfort. The insemination had gone wrong. Was that what had happened to her? Had her product, like the discolored eyeless egg, been thrown aside someplace? But no, they had told her that number 36 was fine. She tried to set aside her troubling thoughts and pay attention to the worker's voice and explanations.
Claire?
The door opened and it was Dimitri, the supervisor, looking for her.
I want to show you the dining room, and they have your schedule almost ready to give you.
So she had continued her tour of the facility and been instructed in her next day's duties, cleaning mostly, everything had to be kept spotless. And later, she had had supper with a group of the workers who lived, as she would now, at the hatchery.
They talked mostly about what they had done during recreation time. There was an hour allotted each day when they could do whatever they liked. Someone mentioned a bike ride and a picnic lunch along the river. Apparently the kitchen staff would pack your lunch in a basket if you asked in advance.
Two young men had joined a ball game. Someone had watched repairs being done on the bridge. It was aimless, pleasant chat, but it served to remind Claire that she was freer now than she had been in a long time. She could go for a walk after lunch, she thought, or in the evening. Later, in her room, thinking, she realized what she wanted to do when she had time. Not just an ordinary walk. She wanted to try to find a girl named Sophia, a girl her own age, a girl who had turned 12 when Claire did. They had not been particular friends, just acquaintances and schoolmates who had happened to share a birth year. But Sophia had been seated next to Claire at the ceremony when they were given their assignments.
Birth mother, the chief elder had announced when it was Claire's turn to stand and be acknowledged.
She had shaken the chief elder's hand, smiled politely at the audience, taken her official assignment papers, and gone back to her seat. Sophia had stood next.
Nurturer,
the chief elder had named Sophia. It had meant little to Claire then, but now it meant that Sophia, an assistant at first, probably by now fully trained, was working in the nurturing center, the place where Claire's product, her child, her baby, was being held and fed.
Days passed. Claire waited for the right time. Usually the workers took their breaks in pairs or groups. People would wonder if she wandered off alone during a break. There would be murmurs about her and questions. She didn't want that. She needed them to see her as hardworking and responsible, as someone ordinary, someone without secrets.
So she waited, worked, and began to fit in. She made friends. One lunchtime, she joined several co-workers in a picnic along the riverbank. They leaned their bikes against nearby trees and sat on some flat rocks in the high grass while they unpacked the prepared food. Nearby, on the path, two young boys rode by on their bikes, laughing at something and waved to them.
Hey, look, one boy was pointing. Supply boat!
Eagerly, the two youngsters dropped their bikes and scrambled down the sloping riverbank to watch as the barge-like boat passed, its open deck heavy with wooden containers of various sizes. Rolf, one of the picnickers, looked at his watch and then at the boys.
They're going to be late getting back to school, he commented with a wry smile. The others all chuckled.
Now that they were finished with school, it was easy to be amused by the regulations that they had all lived by as children.
I was late once, Claire told them. Because a groundskeeper sliced his hand while he was pruning the bushes over by the central offices. I stopped and watched while they bandaged him and took him off to the infirmary for stitches. I used to hope I'd be assigned nursing attendant, she added.
There was an awkward silence for a moment. Claire wasn't certain if they knew her background. Undoubtedly, there had been some explanation given for her sudden appearance at the hatchery, but probably they had been told no details. To have failed at one's assignment, to be reassigned, had something of a shame to it. No one would ever mention it if they did know. No one would ask.
Well, the committee knows best, Edith commented primly as she passed sandwiches around. Anyway, there's an element of nursing at the hatchery, all the labs and procedures. Claire nodded.
Hatchery wouldn't have been my first choice, a tall young man named Eric said. I was really hoping for law and justice.
My brother's there, Claire told him.
Does he like it? Eric asked with interest.
Claire shrugged. I guess so. I never see him. He was older. Once he finished his training, he moved away from our dwelling. He might even have a spouse by now.
You'd know that, Rolf pointed out. You see the spouse assignments at the ceremony. I've applied for a spouse, he added, grinning. I had to fill out about 1,000 forms.
Claire didn't tell them that she had not attended the last two ceremonies. Birth mothers did not leave their quarters during their years of production. Claire had never seen a vessel until she became one. She had not known until she had both experienced and observed it that human females swelled and grew and reproduced. No one had told her what birth meant.
Look, Eric said suddenly. The supply boat's stopping at the hatchery. Good. I put in an order quite a while ago.
He glanced down at the riverbank where the two youngsters were still watching the boat.
Boys, he called.
When they looked up, he pointed to the watch on his own wrist.
The school bell is going to ring in less than 5 minutes.
Reluctantly, they climbed back up the bank and went to retrieve their bikes.
Thank you for the reminder, one said politely to Eric. You think the supply boat will still be there after school? The other boy asked eagerly. But Eric shook his head.
They unload quickly, he told the boy, who looked disappointed.
I wish I could be a boat worker.
They could hear one boy say to the other as they set their bikes upright.
I bet they go lots of places we don't even know about. I bet if I were working on a supply boat, I'd get to see...
If we don't get back on time, his friend said nervously, we're not going to be assigned anything. Come on, let's get going.
The boys rode away toward the school building in the distance.
I wonder what he thought he'd get to see as a boat worker, Rolf commented.
They began to tidy up the picnic and to pack away the uneaten food.
Other places, other communities. The boats must make a lot of stops.
Eric folded the napkins and placed them in the basket.
They'd all be the same. What's so exciting about seeing a different hatchery, a different school, a different nurturing center, a different...
Edith interrupted them.
It's pointless to speculate, she said in her terse, businesslike tone. Accomplishes nothing. Wondering is very likely against the rules, though I suppose it isn't a serious infringement.
Eric rolled his eyes and handed Rolf the basket.
Here, he said. Strap this on your bike and take it back, would you? I have to do an errand. I told the lab chief that I'd pick up some stuff at the supply center.
Rolf, attaching the basket to his bike by its transportation straps, commented,
It might be nice to travel on the river, though, just for the trip. Fun to see new things. Even, he added facetiously, if you haven't wondered about them.
Edith ignored that.
Could be dangerous, Eric pointed out. That water's deep.
He looked around, making sure they had collected everything.
Ready to go back?
Claire and Edith nodded and moved their bikes to the path. Eric waved and rode off on his errand.
Even if it might be against the rules, some kind of infringement, it would be hard to know without studying the thick book of community regulations, though it was always available on the monitor in the hatchery lobby. But there were pages and pages of very small print, and no one ever bothered to look at it, as far as Claire could tell. There would be no way for anyone to get caught in the act of wondering, Claire thought. It was an invisible thing, like a secret. She herself spent a great deal of time at it, wondering. Pedaling back,
She rehearsed in her mind silently how easy it would be to say in a casual voice, "I have to run an errand." How she could slip away, it wouldn't take long, and ride over to the nurturing center to find Sophia and ask some questions.
Chapter 4. Then the occasion came.
"I just realized that the biology teacher never returned the posters I let him use," Dimitri said irritably at lunch, "and I'll need them tomorrow morning."
"I'll go get them," Claire offered.
"Thanks," the lab director nodded in her direction. "That's a help. There will be a group of volunteers starting indoctrination, and the visual aids make things easier."
They were eating in the hatchery cafeteria, six of them at the same table. There was no assigned seating, and today Claire, balancing her tray of prepared food, had made her way to an empty chair at this table where the director was already sitting with several technicians. He was talking about a set of demonstration posters that he liked to use when there were visitors being given a tour of the facility.
The biology teacher had borrowed them, and they had not yet been returned.
"Notify the school. They'll have a student bring them."
One of the technicians had finished eating and was tidying his tray.
"And they'll chastise the teacher," he added, with a malicious chuckle, as he stood.
"No need," Claire said. "I have another errand over that way. It'll be easy for me to stop by the school."
That wasn't really a lie, she told herself. Lying was against the rules. They all knew that, abided by it. And she hadn't made it up, the other errand she had mentioned. She only hoped no one would ask her what it was. But their attention was elsewhere now. They were crumpling their napkins, looking at their watches, preparing to return to work. It was her chance to look for Sophia. Her stop at the school was brief, and the biology teacher didn't recognize her. Claire had never studied biology. At 12, when the selections were made and the future jobs assigned, the children's education took different paths. Some in her group, she remembered a boy named Marcus, who excelled in school and was assigned a future as an engineer, would continue on and learn various sciences. He had probably completed biology by now, she guessed, and would be studying higher mathematics or astrophysics or biochemistry, one of the subjects that was whispered about when they were young as incomprehensibly difficult. Marcus wouldn't be in this ordinary school anymore, but in one of the higher education buildings reserved for scholars. Though she had been young at the time, Claire remembered when Peter, her brother, had moved on to higher education. Maybe Peter had even learned biology in school. But then he had been transferred over to the law buildings for his clerkship and studies. The hallways were familiar, and she found the biology classroom without difficulty.
"I had intended to return these," the biology teacher told her, handing Claire the rolled-up posters. "Would you please tell him that I didn't realize he would need them back so soon?"
He sounded slightly annoyed.
"Yes, I'll tell him. Thank you."
Claire left the teacher there at his desk in the classroom and made her way down the hall toward the front door. She glanced into the empty rooms. School hours had ended and the children had gone to their various volunteer jobs in the community. But she was familiar with some of the rooms, and she recognized a language teacher who leaned over a desk, packing things into a briefcase. Claire nodded uncertainly when the woman looked up and saw her.
"Claire, is it?" The teacher smiled. "What a surprise! What?"
But she didn't continue the question, though the look on her face was curious. Certainly the teacher would have remembered her selection as birth mother, and clearly a birth mother had no business in the school or, in fact, anywhere in the day-to-day geography of the community. But it would have been extremely rude to ask why Claire was there. So the teacher cut off her own question and simply smiled in greeting.
"I'm just here collecting something," Claire explained, holding up the cylinder of posters. "It's nice to see you again."
She continued down the hall and out through the front entrance of the education building and took her bicycle from the rack by the steps. Carefully, she attached the bundle of papers securely to the holder on the back of the bike. Nearby, a gardener transplanting a bush glanced at her without interest. Two children on bicycles pedaled past quickly, rushing toward something, probably worried about being late for their required volunteer hours. Everything was familiar,
unchanged, but it still felt odd to Claire to be back in the community again. She had not ventured far from the hatchery before this, just the short excursions with her co-workers. Over there, she thought, looking down the path she had ridden to get to the school, I can almost see the dwelling where I grew up. Briefly, she wondered about her parents, whether they ever thought of her, or for that matter of Peter. They had raised two children successfully, fulfilling the job of adults with spouses. Peter had achieved a highly prestigious assignment, and she, Claire, had not. Birth mother. At the ceremony, standing on the stage to receive her assignment, she had not been able to see her parents' faces in the crowd. But she could imagine how they looked, how disappointed they would have been. They had hoped for more from their female child. There's honor in it, she remembered her mother saying reassuringly that night. Birth mothers provide our future population. But it felt a little like those times when they had opened the dinner delivery containers to find that the evening meal would be grains prepared with fish oil. High vitamin D, her mother would say in that same cheerful voice, in an attempt to make the meal seem more appealing than it really was. Claire biked away from the education buildings and hesitated at the corner where several paths intersected. She could turn right and ride past the back of Law and Justice, straight along that path, and be back at the hatchery in a few minutes. But instead, she continued straight, then turned left, so that the House of the Old, surrounded by trees, was just ahead of her. She turned right here and slowed her bicycle near the child care center, steering carefully around a food delivery vehicle being unloaded. Then she made her way straight ahead toward the nurturing center. It was surprising, she thought, as she approached the structure, that she had never spent volunteer hours there as a schoolgirl. She had worked often at the child care center and had enjoyed the time playing educational games with the toddlers and young children. But infants, they were called new children, had never interested her. Some of her friends and age mates had thought the little ones cute, but not Claire. From what she had heard described, they were endless work. Feeding, rocking, bathing, and they cried too much. She had avoided doing her hours there. Now, planning how she would present herself at the entrance to the nurturing center, Claire realized that she was excited and a little nervous. She rehearsed what she might say when she went inside. To ask for Sophia would be foolish. Sophia would probably barely remember her. They had not been particular friends. But why else would she be appearing there, asking to enter? Well, Claire decided abruptly, she would lie once again. Against the rules, she knew that. Once she would have cared. Now, she didn't, as simple as that. And it was just a small lie. She wheeled her bicycle into the rack where several slots had been left open for visitors. Then she disengaged the rolled posters from the carrier and took them with her to the front door. Inside, a young woman sitting at a desk looked up from her papers and smiled at her. Good afternoon, she said politely, peering at Claire's name tag. Can I help you? Claire introduced herself. I'm a worker at the hatchery, she explained. We have these extra posters explaining the life cycle of salmon. I was wondering if you could use some to decorate your walls. If the young woman said yes, she realized, she would have some explaining to do to the hatchery director, who was at this very moment expecting his posters back. But it was a pretty safe assumption that the answer would be no. Who would care about examining the growth of fish? It wasn't even that interesting to those who worked with them. And indeed, the young woman smiled and shook her head. Thank you, she said. But we have specially designed equipment to engage the attention of new children. We don't deviate from the standard means of helping them to focus their attention span and to exercise their small muscles. Everything is pretty carefully calibrated by the experts in infant development. Claire nodded. Interesting, she said. I'm sorry I never volunteered here. I don't know much about nurturing at all. Do you ever let visitors have a tour? The receptionist appeared pleased at her interest. Never been here at all, my goodness. It's such a fun place. You should certainly take a look, since you're here anyway. Let me see who's on duty. She ran her finger down a list of names. Is Sophia here? Claire asked. She was with my age group.
Oh, Sophia, she's such a diligent worker. Let me look. Yes, there's her name. Let's see if she's available.
Summoned through the intercom by the receptionist, Sophia entered the front hallway from a corridor on the side. She hadn't changed much since they had both been 12 almost 3 years before. She was thin, with her hair pulled back under a cap, which seemed to be part of her uniform. Claire smiled at her.
Hi, she said. I don't know if you remember me. I was 12 when you were. My name's Claire?
Sophia looked at Claire's name tag and nodded with a small smile of recognition after a moment.
We don't wear name tags, Sophia explained, because the new children would grab at them. But I remember you. I think we were in the same math class.
I hated math. I was never very good at it. Claire made a face. Sophia chuckled.
I did pretty well, but it never interested me much. Remember Marcus? He got such high marks in math. He's in engineering studies now.
Claire nodded.
He was always studying, she recalled.
Sophia frowned and peered toward the small print under Claire's name on her name tag.
I forgot what your assignment was, she said. Your uniform is...
Fish hatchery, Claire explained quickly.
Good. Sophia didn't remember that she had been assigned birth mother.
And so what are you doing here?
Hoping to get a tour, Claire told her.
Somehow I missed out on the whole nurturing section, and I have a little free time this afternoon.
Oh, well, all right. You can follow along and I'll explain things, but I have to work. It's almost feeding time. Come on, clean your hands first.
Sophia pointed to a disinfectant dispenser on the wall of the corridor, and Claire followed her example, rubbing her hands carefully with the clear medicinal liquid.
The youngest ones are in this first room.
Youngest ones. That meant the most recent new children. Claire thought back and remembered which of her sister vessels had been preparing to give birth when she was dismissed. These would be their products.
We can't go in this one without changing the sterile uniforms, but we can look at them.
Sophia pointed through a window to a spotlessly clean area filled with small wheeled carts, many empty. Two workers, a young man in a nurturer's uniform, and a volunteer, a girl of 10 or so, were tidying things. They looked up at the window, saw the two observers, and smiled.
How many newest?
Sophia called through the glass. The volunteer held up 4 fingers. Then she moved to one of the carts and pushed it closer to the window so Sophia and Claire could see. A card on the side had a gender symbol indicating female and the number 45.
45? Claire asked, looking down at the infant who was wrapped tightly in a light blanket with only its small face exposed.
The eyes were tightly closed.
What's that mean?
Sophia looked at her in surprise.
Number 45. 45th new child this year, just 5 more to come. Don't you remember? We all had numbers. I was 27.
Oh, yes, of course. I was one of the earliest ones our year. I was number 11.
And she did remember, now that Sophia had reminded her. After age 12, the numbers didn't matter much, were rarely referred to. But being number 11 had served her well when she was young. It had meant that she was the 11th new child her year, older, therefore, than so many others, like Sophia, who had been later to walk and talk, later to shoot up in height.
By 12, of course, most of that evened out, but Claire could remember being a 5 and a 6, and proud that she was a little ahead of so many others.
What about the other ones in this year's batch? Claire asked.
Sophia gestured.
The oldest, numbers 1 to 10? They're in that room over there. A couple of them can walk already. She rolled her eyes. It's really a nuisance to chase after them.
She started down the hall and turned a corner, Claire following.
Then the next oldest are here.
Another large window allowed the two young women to look into a room where a group of infants crawled on the carpeted floor strewn with toys while their attendants prepared bottles at a counter and sink against the wall.
So they're arranged in groups of 10?
Sophia nodded.
5 rooms and 10 in each when we have our full 50. Right now we still have a few newborns due to come in. Then when we reach 50, no more till after the next ceremony.
She waved cheerfully at the volunteer putting the bottles into the warming device, and the young girl grinned and waved back.
Then, of course, after this year's 50 are assigned, we start fresh after the ceremony with new ones coming in gradually. It's like a little vacation.
It's a while still, till the ceremony. But you have almost the full 50?
It's timed over at the birthing unit so we don't get a batch of newborns late in the year. Parents being given new children don't want brand new ones.
Too much work?
Not really. You saw a minute ago. Those newest ones, they mostly sleep. But it's a lot of responsibility, keeping everything sterile. Also, you can't play with the new ones. Parents like to play with their children when they get them.
Claire was half listening. 36, she thought. Her product had been number 36. She had kept the number firmly in her mind.
So next is the third 10, she asked. Let me think. 1 to 10, then this group is 11 to 20. The next group will be 21 to 30, right?
Yes, over there, across the hall. I usually work with that group. I'm going to have to go back in a minute to help feed.
Claire glanced through the window that displayed Sophia's group of infants who were dangling in swings suspended from the ceiling, kicking their bare feet against the carpet. A male attendant was changing one on a padded table. He noticed the girls and pointed meaningfully to the large clock on the wall. Sophia opened the door a crack, and Claire could hear the gurgles and giggles as the infants talked to one another. She smiled. She had not thought of new children as being appealing, not at all. But there was a sweetness to these little ones, she had to admit. She could understand why new parents wanted ones they could play with.
"I'll be right in," Sophia was telling her co-worker. "I'm giving a tour." "Or," she turned to Claire, "we could stop here. There's only one more group, the next to youngest. They're not that interesting. Want to come in and play with these? You could feed one if you want."
Claire hesitated. She didn't want to seem oddly interested in a particular group.
"You know," she told Sophia, "I'd really like to peek at the last group just so I can say I've seen them all, if you don't mind."
Sophia sighed.
"I'll be back in a minute," she told the uniformed man who had placed the newly changed infant back in a swing and was now taking small bowls of cereal from the warmer.
"Over here," Sophia told Claire, and led her to the last room in the corridor.
"So these would be, let me think, 31 to 40?
"Correct." Sophia was clearly eager to get back to her own charges.
"Next to newest."
"May I go in?" Claire was looking through the observation window. Each small crib held an infant, and two attendants were propping warmed bottles on padded holders beside their heads so that they could suck.
"I guess,"
Sophia opened the door and asked,
"we have a visitor. Could you use a hand for this feed?"
A uniformed man smiled.
"How about two hands? We can use all the help we can get."
"I have to get back to work with my own group, but I'll leave her here with you."
"Thanks, Sophia. It's been good to see you again," Claire smiled. "Maybe we could get together for lunch or something."
"Yes, come back any time. Best is when they're napping, though."
She gave a brief goodbye gesture and returned to her own assigned room. Claire entered timidly and stood watching as the final bottles were distributed.
"There," the attendant said. "Everyone's been served. Now we have to check from time to time and make sure they're all properly placed. Of course, they'll yell if they lose hold of the nipple. Won't you?"
He glanced down with a smile at one of the infants who was industriously sucking at the milk.
"And then one by one we pick the little guys up and pat their backs till they burp. Ever done that?"
Claire shook her head. Till they burp? She couldn't even imagine it.
"No,"
he chuckled. "Well, you can watch. Then if you want to give it a try." He lifted one of the infants from its crib. Claire moved forward and saw the number. 40. She glanced around to see if the numbers were in order, but the little beds were on wheels and seemed to have been placed randomly. As she watched, the attendant took 40 to a rocking chair in the corner and sat down with the little one against his shoulder. The other attendant, a young woman, leaned forward over a crib with a sniff and said suddenly,
"Uh-oh, 34 needs changing." She wrinkled her nose and pushed the crib over to the changing area. "You'll have to finish your bottle after I clean you up, little girl," she said with a chuckle, and lifted the infant to the table.
Claire noticed then that each small crib here was also tagged with a gender symbol. She made her way past the little beds, glancing in at the infants, some sucking serenely on their milk, others gulping lustily. Suddenly, one in a crib marked male let out a shriek, then switched to a loud wail.
I don't need to ask who that is, the man said, continuing to pat and stroke the back of the infant he held. I recognize his voice.
Claire looked at the number on the crib that contained the howling new child.
It's 36, she told him.
Of course it's 36, the man replied, laughing. It's always 36. Pick him up, would you? See if you can get him to stop screeching.
Claire took a deep breath. She had never held an infant before. The man, watching her, sensed that.
He won't break. They're quite tough, actually. Just be sure to support his head.
She leaned down. Her hands seemed to know what to do. They slid easily under him and found the way to hold his neck and head. Gently, Claire picked up her son. Chapter 5. Nothing changed. Claire's life didn't change. She woke each day, showered, donned her uniform, and attached her name tag. Claire, hatchery assistant. She went to the cafeteria, greeted her co-workers, ate the morning meal, and began her assigned tasks. The superiors at the hatchery were pleased with her work. But at the same time, everything was different. Her every thought now was on the new child she had met only once, had held for a moment, whose light eyes she had gazed into briefly, whose curly hair had touched her chin for too short a time. Number 36. Have they chosen the name yet? She had asked the young woman attendant who was repropping the bottle for the female one she had changed and returned to her crib. For this one? I don't think so. They don't tell us anyway. We never know their names until they're assigned. Each new child was given to his assigned parents at the ceremony that would take place in December. Their names, chosen by a committee, were announced then.
I meant this one, Claire explained.
She had taken an empty rocking chair and moved back and forth now with 36, whose loud crying had subsided. He was looking up at Claire.
Oh, that one. He might not even get a name at the next ceremony. They're already talking about keeping him here another year. He's not doing well. They call it failure to thrive. The young woman shrugged. Actually, he does have a name lined up.
The man returned the infant he'd been burping to the crib, repropped her bottle, came to where Claire was, and looked down at 36.
Hey there, little guy, he said, in a sing-song voice. He does? How do you know?
The young woman looked surprised. The man took 36 from Claire, who relinquished him reluctantly.
I've been concerned about him, he explained.
He looked down and made a funny face, as if encouraging the unhappy infant to laugh.
I thought it might make him more responsive if I started using his name, so I sneaked into the office and took a look at the list.
And? His assistant asked.
And what?
His name is? The man laughed.
Not telling. I only use it in secret. If it's overheard, big trouble, so I'm being careful.
He jiggled the infant in his lap.
It's a good name, though. Suits him.
The woman sighed.
Well, it had better perk him up before December, she said, if he wants to get a family, and right now, she added, looking at the wall clock, it's going to be nap time soon, and we haven't even finished the feeds.
They had forgotten Claire was there. She rose from the rocker. It was true that time had passed quickly.
I have to get back, she told them. I wonder, would it be all right if I visit again?
They were both silent for a moment. She realized why. It was an odd request. Children volunteered at many different places. It was required. But after the assignments, after childhood, people worked at their assigned jobs. They didn't visit around or try out other things. She tried to come up quickly with an explanation that seemed logical.
I have a lot of free time, Claire said. It's a slow time of year at the hatchery, so I wandered over today to visit Sophia. You know Sophia, she works down the hall with the next older new children?
They nodded.
21 to 30, the man said. That's Sophia's group.
Yes, anyway, she showed me around a bit, and I can see that you can use an extra pair of hands from time to time, so I'm just offering to help out. If you'd like me to, of course.
Claire was aware that she was talking very fast. She was nervous, but the pair didn't seem to notice.
You know, the man said. If you wanted to do it on a regular basis, make it official, I think you'd have to fill out some forms.
The young woman agreed. Get permission, she added.
Claire's heart sank. She could never do that. Never fill out official forms. They would identify her immediately as the birth mother who had been reassigned.
36 wiggled and wailed. The man carried him to his crib and propped his bottle, but the wailing continued. The man patted the thrashing legs in a vain attempt to soothe him. He looked over at Claire with a wry smile.
But come on over when you have free time, he said, just on a casual basis.
Maybe I will, Claire said, keeping her voice light as his had been, if I have a few moments sometime.
She turned and fled. 36 continued to cry. She could still hear him as she left the building. Now she thought of nothing else, of no one else. Chapter 6. It felt very strange to have this feeling, whatever this feeling was. Claire had never experienced it before. The yearning she had to be with the new child, remembering his face, how the solemn light eyes had stared at her, the way his hair curved around the top of his head and lifted into a curl there, the wrinkling of his forehead and his quivering chin before he began to cry. Each family unit was allotted 2 children, one of each gender, and she had been the younger. They had waited several years after receiving Peter before they had applied for their girl. So Claire had never known an infant or a small child well. She asked her co-workers, trying to make it a casual question at the evening meal. Do any of you remember getting your sibling?
Sure, Rolf said. I was 8 when we got my sister.
I was older, Edith said. My parents waited quite a long time before they applied for my brother. I think I was 11.
I was the 2nd child in my family, Eric said. Anyone want that last piece of bread?
They all shook their heads, and Eric took the last slice from the serving plate.
My sister was only 3 when they got me. I think my mother actually liked little children.
He made a face as if the idea mystified him.
That's what I was wondering about, actually, Claire explained. Is it, well, usual for people to become really fond of new children?
Depends what you mean by fond, Dimitri said.
The head of the entire hatchery operation, Dimitri was an upper-level worker. He was older and had studied science intensively.
But you know, of course, that infants of any species...
He stopped and looked at the rest of them at their blank expressions.
Didn't you study this in evolutionary biology? He asked.
Finally, at the silence, he chuckled.
All right, so you don't know. I'll explain. Infants are born with big, wide-spaced eyes, generally, and large heads, because that makes them look appealing to the adults of the species. So it ensures that they will be fed and cared for, because they look...
Cute? Edith interrupted.
Right, cute. If they were born ugly, no one would want to pick them up or smile at them or talk to them. They wouldn't get fed. They wouldn't learn to smile or talk. They might not survive if they didn't appeal to the adults.
What do you mean by any species? Eric asked.
Well, we don't have mammals anymore because a healthy diet didn't include mammal, and they detracted from the efficiency of the community. But in other areas, there are wild creatures of all sorts. And even here, people once had things they called pets, usually small things, dogs or cats. It was the same in those species. The newborns were, well, cute, big eyes usually. Animals don't smile, though. That's a skill unique to humans.
Claire was fascinated.
What did people do with pets?
Dimitri shrugged.
Played with them, I think. And also pets provided company for lonely people. We don't have those now, of course.
Nobody's lonely here, Edith agreed.
Claire was quiet. She didn't say this, but she was thinking, I am. I am lonely. Even as she thought it, though, she realized she didn't really know what the term meant. The first buzzer sounded, meaning time to finish up. They began to stack their trays.
Rolf, Edith, Claire asked, when you got your siblings and they were infants with big eyes and big heads, and so they were cute,
both of her co-workers shrugged.
I guess, Edith said.
Did you think about them all the time and want to hold them and not ever leave them?
They looked at Claire as if she had said something preposterous or unintelligible. She hastened to rephrase her question.
Or maybe I meant your mother's. Did your mother's cuddle your siblings and rock them and, well?
My mother worked, just like every other mother. She took very competent care of my sister, of course, and she took her to the child care center every day, Rolf said. She wasn't a cuddler, though, not my mother.
Same with my mother and my brother, Edith said. My father and I helped her to take care of him, but both of my parents had very demanding jobs, and I had school, of course, and then my training. We were all happy to drop him off every day at the center. We took great pride in him, of course. He was a very intelligent infant, she added primly. He's studying computer science now.
The final buzzer sounded, and they all rose to go back to work.
I must put 36 out of my mind, Claire told herself.
But she found it impossible. Each day, at her microscope, examining the embryonic salmon for flaws in their structure, Claire looked at the large dark spots that were their primitive, unformed eyes. She imagined that they were gazing at her. It was clearly impossible. Those murky, glistening orbs were not capable of vision, not yet, and there was no intelligence within the quivering blob, nothing that craved affection or even attention. But she found herself reminded again and again of the pale, long-lashed eyes that had looked up at her briefly, and of the small fingers that had encircled her thumb. She began to dream of 36. In one dream, she wore the leather mask again, but they had handed her something to hold. It moved, tentatively in her arms, and she clasped it tightly, knowing it was he, not wanting them to take him away, weeping behind the mask when they did. In another recurrent dream, 36 was here with her, in her small room at the hatchery, but no one knew. She kept him hidden in a drawer and opened it from time to time. He would look up and smile at her. Secrecy was forbidden in the community, and the dream of the hidden new child caused her to wake with a feeling of guilt and dread. But a stronger feeling was the one that had stayed with her after that dream. The excitement of opening the drawer and seeing that he was still there, that he was safe and smiling. As children, within the family unit, they had been required to tell their dreams each morning. For single working members of the community, like those at the hatchery, the requirement was set aside. Occasionally at the morning meal, one of the workers would recount an amusing dream. But there was none of the discussion that had been part of the family ritual, and Claire kept her new dreams private. But she felt restless now, and different, in ways she didn't understand. In keeping with the demands of her new job and its meticulousness, its constant analyzing, she tried to examine her own feelings. She had never done so before, had never needed to. For Claire's entire life, her feelings had been those of... what? She searched in her mind for the right descriptive word. Contentment. Yes, she had always been content. Everyone was in the community. Their needs were tended to. There was nothing they lacked, nothing they... That was it, Claire realized. She had never yearned for anything before. But now, ever since the day of the birth, she felt a yearning constantly, desperately, to fill the emptiness inside her. She wanted her child. Time passed. It became mid-November. She was busy with her work, but finally, she found a time to return to the nurturing center. Chapter 7.
Hello again. The man's greeting was cheerful and welcoming. I thought you'd forgotten us.
Claire smiled, pleased that he recognized her.
No, but it's been a busy time at work. It's been hard to get away.
Well, he agreed, it's almost December. Lots going on.
Especially here, I imagine.
Claire gestured to indicate that she meant the entire nurturing center, not only this one room, where the lights were dimmed. It was just past midday mealtime, and the new children were all napping. She and the man spoke in lowered voices. In the corner, his female assistant was quietly folding clean laundry that had just been delivered.
Yes, we're getting them all ready. Apparently their assignments have all been made. I haven't seen the list yet.
A sudden thought struck Claire. Do you have a spouse? Could you apply for a child and then...
I suppose this would be against the rules, but could you choose the one that would be assigned to you?
He laughed. Too late for that. Yes, I have a spouse. She works over at Law and Justice. But we already have our complete family. Boy first, then girl. And it was quite a while ago that we got them. I was just an assistant then. No clout.
So you didn't even hint at which ones?
He shook his head. Didn't matter. They matched them pretty carefully. We've been very satisfied with ours.
A sound from one of the cribs caught his attention and he turned. It grew louder, the fussy whimper of an infant. Claire could see a small arm flail.
You want me to get him?
The assistant asked, looking over.
No, I will. It's 36 again, of course.
His voice was resigned and affectionate.
Could I?
Claire asked, surprising herself.
Be my guest.
The man made a joking gesture toward the crib.
He likes being talked to, and sometimes patting his back helps.
Or not,
the woman in the corner interjected wryly, and the man laughed. Claire lifted the restless new child from his crib.
Walk him in the hall,
the man suggested, so he doesn't wake up the others.
Holding him carefully, she carried the wriggly, whimpering bundle out of the room and walked back and forth in the long hallway, jiggling him against her shoulder so that he calmed slightly. He held his head up and looked around with wide eyes. She found herself talking to him, nonsense words and phrases, in a sing-song voice.
She nuzzled his neck and smelled his milky, powdered scent.
He relaxed in her arms finally and dozed.
I could walk out of here, Claire thought. I could leave right now. I could take him.
Even as she had the thought, she could see the impossibility of it. She had no idea how to feed or care for an infant. No place to hide him, despite her tempting dream of the secret drawer in her room.
The man appeared in the doorway, smiled when he saw that the infant was asleep, and beckoned.
Good job, he whispered when she approached.
They stood in the hallway together by a window that looked out across scattered dwellings and the agricultural fields beyond. Two boys rode past on bicycles and the man waved, but the boys were talking eagerly together and didn't notice. The man shrugged and chuckled.
My son, he explained.
She watched and could see the boys turn left where the path intersected another just past the child care center. They were probably going to the recreation field.
You've got just the right touch, the man said,
and Claire looked at him questioningly. He nodded toward the sleeping infant she was still holding.
He hardly sleeps. Classic failure to thrive, so they've decided not to assign him to a family at the ceremony. We're going to keep him here another year, give him a chance to mature a bit. Some new children do take longer than others. 36 has been very difficult. I take him back to my dwelling at night, he explained. The night crew here has been complaining about him. He keeps the others awake, so he spends nights with my family.
He reached for the infant, and Claire relinquished him reluctantly. As she passed him from her arms into the man's, she felt something. She pushed the blanket aside and looked at a metal bracelet encircling one tiny ankle. What's this?
Security. It would set off an alarm if he were removed from the building.
Claire took a quick breath, recalling the thought she had briefly. I could take him.
All the new children wear them. I'm not sure why. Who would want one? The man chuckled. I'll take this off when I take him with me at the end of the day.
The infant slept on, and the man murmured to him quietly.
Good boy, she could hear him say. Coming home with me tonight? That's a good boy.
He turned away, still murmuring, and took the new child back to his crib. Watching and listening, Claire thought she heard the nurturer whisper a name, but she couldn't quite make out what it was. Abe? Was that it? It sounded, she thought, like Abe.